Do you want me to get on my hands and knees and beg? If you want, I'll do that. I'll get down, I'll talk to the truck. I'll tell them, please, just send us some information. Is that hard to find out? I'll show you how to get to the building. Take a cab around the building. Walk outside of the building. You'll see Cobo Hall. But could someone please tell us what is going on, please?
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
3,000 horsepower between the two vehicles. I understand some 11 or 12,000 pounds.
If Hogan has the courage to show up, if he finds the heart to meet me on the roof of Cobo Hall, it's not going to be there. Because I'm going to push him right clean off the roof.
Brother, first it's machine against machine. I'm going to push that giant right out of the circle, brother.
Here in front of a capacity crowd at Joe Louis Arena, WCW heavyweight champion Hulk Hogan putting the title on the line after the monster truck competition.
If he lives, I'll tell you one thing right now. Hogan is going to get the beating of his life.
I'm going to ride that giant through the straddle of the night, brother. And when he starts huffing and puffing and running out of gas, I'm going to squash him.
Grab your plunder and open the pay window. It's time for Survey Says.
With a nip in the air and Quaaludes in hand, oh, so help us God. We're coming to you live from the Joe Louis Arena, and I guess improbably enough, Cobo Hall, here in Detroit, Michigan. Hello, everyone. I am Tim Capel with Andy Savage, Helene. Andy, are you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready, but my mustache is a little crooked.
Yes, at least you're dressed for the occasion, if nothing else. We are Survey Says. This is Halloween Havoc 1995. Oh my, there's no way we are going into this sober or alone. So to that end, we've got, actually, for our first time ever, not one, but two returning guests presenting first. You heard her just a few months prior on episode 16 of Survey Says. Going to welcome back my co-host from Talkin' Pop on Place to Be Nation Pop. She is Miss NWO Jennifer Smith. Jenny, what is your poison tonight?
Hi, boys. My poison is Crown Royal Black tonight.
Ah.
I'm just emptying out a bottle that I bought 2 days ago. So, yeah, doing well.
Doing it upright.
Yeah.
Okay, then. So, finally, reaching all the way back to Survey Says it was episode...
Number four,
that's right. Our friend, he's our good friend, and that's Steve Wildcat Willie. Now, Steve... what is your favorite foreign object, and why is it a shit-covered speculum?
Check out the PTBN Pop feed for more on the shit-covered speculum. I could have used it and plowed it right through my eyeball during the show. Halloween Havoc, not Survey Says.
Well, there's going to be little difference by the time we're done, I think. That there in the business is what we call an inaccessible joke. So check out.
Do we call it that?
I don't know.
I would call it a plug.
Depends on how
literally and figuratively.
I guess it depends on how much of a crossover audience we have.
Yeah, can you imagine an eye infected with E. coli?
It's dreadful. But, you know, no worse than watching this show, perhaps.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, okay. Man, I like the show.
Y'all are acting like this is terrible, and it's not.
I know. This is one thing I want to get into right away. So, no bullshit, let's get right into it. Jenny, how many times have you watched this show?
Today was my fifth time I watched.
Shut up.
I love it. And Jenny, how long have you been watching wrestling?
8 months?
Yeah.
Yeah.
About a year.
Yeah, kind of.
That is outstanding. I love this. Steve, Wildcat Willie.
Yes.
How many times have you seen this show?
I've watched this show once on a real picture and once in Scramble Vision in 1995.
Oh, boy. All right, so this is probably my third time through. Andy, what was your first encounter with Halloween Havoc 95?
I saw the main event, like, about a year ago. And then, like, I've went through it about three times in the last, like, 2 weeks.
It's addictive.
Yeah, yeah, I dug it.
Mm-hmm. It kind of is. And it's weird because this is one of those infamously so bad it's good type of shows that there's, like, more nostalgia for than I think anyone realized. And it gets talked about, I don't know, maybe more than any WCW pay-per-view, especially in, like, podcasting circles. I know just on Place to Be Nation, it has come up quite a bit, even in, you know, recent memory here. I think on the Wrestling War Zone, Justin and Chad just tackled it.
Who?
You know what? You're gonna have to take that up with the brass.
I'm straight shooting tonight.
Clearly you are. And yeah, they reviewed it. I know it's come up a time or two before that, so I don't know. This is going to be our official Survey Says take on this program. So let's jump right into it. We've got an opening match here of Diamond Dallas Page and Johnny B. Badd, World Television Championship on the line. 17 minutes here. Kind of a longish match for these two, but I thought it was a hot opener, pretty good. Andy, what do you think of this one? I know we talked DDP on just our last show. We didn't get into this particular match too much. Did you dig it?
Yeah, like I think we talked about their first one, the Spring Stampede match,
before
a couple shows ago. And this one is like so much better. It's almost like they're almost two different guys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They've progressed a whole lot since then. And this, of course, is kind of beginning that 95 feud between these two where it's kind of just DDP losing one match after another. This is the first in that series, and he drops the TV title that he won the month prior to Johnny B. Badd here. He's got his bodyguard, Max Muscle. He's got his hot valet, of course, Kimberly. Jenny, what do you think of, have you had a lot of exposure to Kimberly Page, the Diamond Doll, in your WCW watches?
Not in my watches, but in my listening of Tony Schiavone's podcast. Him and Conrad have some choice comments to make about Kimberly quite often.
Quite so, yes. Mm-hmm. And she is a brunette. She's not a blonde.
Right.
So she's kind of,
Hachimachi for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah, you got that. Steve, Max Muscle, is he the best bodyguard that a wrestler could ask for?
He's no Tyson Tomko, but he's one of those short, strong guys, like, right, that just is overcompensating for something, clearly.
For what?
Just being short.
Right. Oh.
But there's a lot of those guys going around at these times. Like, Bill Kazmaier's, like, a gigantic man who's wider than he is tall.
Yeah, we might see some more on this show as well.
Yeah. He's dumb, though. He's very, very dumb. And acts dumb as well.
Right, right. Plays that part. Yeah, very well. Jenny, you mentioned the podcast, What Happened When? What Happened When?
What?
Mm-hmm. With Tony Schiavone and Conrad Thompson. They had a very, very spirited review of
they did
about a year ago, and that's kind of where that podcast took off. Like, it was
it
just sort of humdrum for a while there, and then they did that live watch of this, and man, Tony was feeling it.
Tony is the absolute best. He makes this show along with Bobby. But yeah, I listened back to some of that episode today, and I mean, he's just the best.
Oh my God! They turned it into like an MST3K
sort
of commentary on it. It's beautiful. It's amazing. Yeah. Now they were somewhat critical of this match, especially going 17 minutes like it did. I mean, they didn't hate the match for what it was, but they kind of dogged on the fact that there were some dark matches on this show that arguably should have made the main pay-per-view. So those
the Benoit match and whatnot.
Yeah. There was a Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit versus Steven. We'll fix it in post.
Okay.
I love when Johnny B. Badd puts the bucket on his head, on DDP's head.
Ah, yes.
That's good stuff.
Solid stuff there.
My favorite part of this whole feud was not the match itself, but the flashback to WCW Saturday Night.
Yes.
Because I remember that clear as day. As soon as I saw it, I remembered seeing it a couple times back when it originally aired, and maybe some other time, who knows. But having saying that someone slashed his tire and that was why he was late, and then Max Muscle, being dumb and short and steroided up, says, "Oh, it's too bad you got, you know, four wheels slashed." And he's like, I never said it was four wheels. It was like the biggest overacting ever. Yeah. Oh, so good.
Wait, how did you know it was four flat tires? I said a flat tire!
Oh, no! What a punch!
And I'm like, that's one of the things that, like, when you're talking, Tim, about, you know, something so bad it's good. That is so bad it's good. I laugh so hard.
And Johnny B. Badd is covered in grease, but in a way that, like, there's no way that naturally could have occurred if he's dealing with an automotive breakdown on the side of the road. He looks very made up.
Very much like a makeup artist took two fingers, the forefinger and the middle finger, of some sort of oil and dabbed it on his cheeks.
Yes. Amazing. So, but yeah, I mean, you can grouse about how some of these dark matches were not on the show proper and this gets 17 minutes, but taken for the match that it is, it's pretty decent. Johnny B. Badd gets all his shit in, I felt like. He looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
And DDP, I mean, yeah, he loses, but that's starting off a kind of long-term storyline for him that's going to eventually propel him to greater things. So I got nothing bad to say about this.
The only bad thing I will say is a fucking Nick Patrick just fucking kills me. This whole show is fucking god-awful.
What's wrong with Nick Patrick?
He's slow as fuck! And, like, the way he counts is ridiculous. It just all looks just terrible to me.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm a Randy Anderson and Mark Curtis guy, so I hear you there.
Oh, okay. I see how it is. The divide here with the WCW officials.
There's only one way this can be decided.
How's that? Machine
versus machine. Man versus man.
Yes. More on that later.
I guess I wanted to point out about DDP's outfit. I thought it looked like a piece of candy corn.
On his junk? Yes, it does.
The diamond upside down.
On his junk and his asshole. Yes, it does look like candy corn.
Yeah.
It's what inspired Rey Mysterio to do different themed outfits. It was Halloween Havoc 95. He's like, hey, candy corn instead of a diamond. And that's probably why Kimberly left him.
Well, you know, it is Halloween. He's dressed up. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. So, in any case, I thought there was a lot of talking on the show between the matches.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, WCW would do that kind of thing on their pay-per-views. It's not completely out of the ordinary. It just felt like there was a lot more of that on this show than they normally do. And that kind of, I'm not going to say took me out of it, but there were moments where it was just sort of like, let's move it along. We get it. We've already, you know, presumably bought the pay-per-view. I don't need to hear about what's coming up next. I know what's on this damn show.
But at the same time, anytime that they're talking with Mean Gene, it's fantastic. So you kind of don't want that to stop.
And he's showing his 900 number.
Yes.
All over the place. You get to see a lot of Tony. I know that.
Yeah.
He appreciated that.
I did.
So, all right. So, should we go back to the ring now? Is there anything between the matches here that we need to talk about? I don't think so. But our next match, our second match on this card here, is Randy Savage. Second on the card, somewhat surprisingly, versus the Zodiac. This is a squash. And there's probably more to say about what happens before and around the match than the match itself. You have a fan, one of Detroit's finest, running in. You know, you kind of wish that Savage had mixed it up with this guy a little bit more, right?
Do we?
I mean, it is sort of his reputation he's got to live up to. And he kind of lets it go. Let's the security take care of it. I don't know. I just... It just doesn't feel like a proper WCW show without a fan running and total down. Zodiac was a replacement for Kamala. And Kamala did not want a job for Randy Savage here. Yeah, so Conrad Thompson said that the Zodiac looked like Beetlejuice fucked a seagull, and that's the closest, I guess, analogy he could draw to the Zodiac's appearance here. Would you agree with that assessment?
I liked his little unicorn, little horn thing on his head.
It's unicorn horn. Yeah, there's that.
What kind of drug problems did a Beefcake have?
Like, what did he have?
The fact that he was Hulk Hogan's bag man, maybe? That's probably his only drug problem.
Because he had his big parasailing accident before this, and they, like, reconstructed his face. Mm-hmm. Like, these things, like, all had to be a rib on him, right? Like, the booty man and... All the, like, how many different characters did he have in WCW?
I think we have this conversation every show.
Well, we should.
I mean, you kind of have to, because he's something different on all of them. I mean, he's coming off of the Butcher, that run. And then, was it the Man with No Name and the Man with No Face, alternatively? Now he's Zodiac. He's going to be the Booty Man.
Next Which was year. Worse than the Zodiac.
Somehow worse than the Zodiac.
Yeah.
Yes. That's going to be it for a while, right? He doesn't come back until Disciple, I think.
Right.
And makes like one more appearance after that, just as himself. So, yeah, quite the career.
Run. And this talk is longer than this match was.
Oh, I know. I know you enjoy that. Do you think these guys, like, after the match, they went backstage and high-fived and yelled at Hulk Hogan and the Giant, "Top that!" All right.
Savage did, for sure.
I think Savage just went into a corner and sulked.
Well,
he went into a corner and smoked some coke is what he did.
He's not done for the night. So
nope.
He's got to keep his working boots on. Oh, mm-hmm. God. What do we have next? And do you have anything else to add on that minute and 30-second match?
One thing that I noticed about the Zodiac was when they announced him, he's from the land of yin and yang, and I was cracking up at that.
Good Lord. Third match. Kurosawa, managed by Colonel Robert Parker, our favorite. He takes on Road Warrior Hawk, solo Road Warrior Hawk, in a 3-minute match. So we're just kind of, some of these matches here don't leave us with a lot to say, and that's totally all right. What's the deal with Kurosawa? Does anyone know? Did they have anything in mind for him? Or are they going somewhere with this character?
I think that he was... Is this part of he showed up with man, what was it? He showed up at ringside. Was he one of the guys at the table that Bobby Heenan would go and sit with? Or am I totally outdating myself?
Well, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Is that coming up later with the Starcade where they had kind of almost like that invasion of like the Japan guys? And that's when they had Sonny Ono bringing guys in? Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's around then.
Okay.
Yeah, could have been. Yeah.
Pretty much besides that, it was just him busting up people.
He has very meaty thighs.
Yes, he does.
So you got that.
He still wrestles today.
Does he really?
Yep. He occasionally comes to New Japan. He's still active there. He'll do a lot of the kind of like low-end tag team, like six-man matches. And then he was in... it was either this year or last year, like the big pre-show battle royal for the January 4th show that they do, the big Tokyo Dome show. Mm. He can barely walk. He wears some sort of, and appropriate since this show was in Detroit, like some sort of like Michigan Wolverine tribute type gear with his logo on it. He's also very fat now.
Okay.
Which works because I think it's, and I wrote this down and I have no idea what it refers to, which makes it even better. But Bobby Heenan said at some point, the simile of like a fat girl sitting on a beanbag. I don't remember what that is in regards to, which I think makes it better.
Amazing.
Bobby was on fire on this night.
Okay, then. So we're going to put Kurosawa down for a future Survey Says wrestler spotlight, definitely. Oh, man. So next up, business picks up, kind of, sort of, at least on paper, with Sabu, with the original Sheik, taking on Mr. JL, better known in some parts as Jerry Lynn. You know, I say on paper because, once again, we've got a three-minute match here. But, man, the 3 minutes that it was, they kind of go for it.
Yep.
I dug this majorly. And wish it had been... I kind of wish it had been the opener. That, I think, would have gotten people going. Again, take nothing away from DDP and Johnny B. Badd, but give these guys, like, I don't know. Did they need 15 minutes? At least 10 minutes.
Yeah, 10 minutes would have been good.
And you got a hell of a match.
So. I couldn't believe when I looked it up, too, as you were saying it, that it was only 3 minutes long, because they got a lot of stuff in that 3 minutes.
They did. They got a lot of shit in. And, I mean, it feels short, but you don't think it feels 3 minutes short. So I definitely dug the hell out of that. There was sort of a botched, like, fireball spot.
Oh my god.
That was the best part.
That was one of my most WCW moments of the show. When the Sheik, you know, who's known for throwing fireballs, threw a heck of a fireball. It was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Lynn sells it, and I love Jerry Lynn. One of my favorites of all time. And they completely missed it on camera, right? They showed like half of it. Mm. So then they go to the replay. And Bobby Heenan's, like, freaking out, like, selling it like he should. Mm. And Tony Schiavone is like, huh? And so they show the replay. Even the replay missed half of it. And yes. Bobby, at this point, is screaming, like, did you see that? Did you see that? Oh, my God. And it's like no one in production. Tony Schiavone just did not care that one of, like, the coolest things ever happened. Like, meh, okay, he threw a giant fireball. All right, next, let's go back to Mean Gene in the back.
We got a motorcycle to give away, guys.
Yes. The giant is somehow both on the roof and in the fake locker room.
Okay, that's a nice pickup. I sort of missed that. And, you know, you've got, like I said, Gene shilling the hotline all night. Speaking of the hotline and Sabu, so apparently he learned that his services were no longer needed by calling into the hotline.
No way.
That's what they say. This is what Meltzer reports.
Oh, my God. And those early Nitros, when he showed up, he was over instantly. Mm-hmm. Like, he was very popular. You know, it popped the crowds quite a bit. But he was, in and out pretty quickly.
And isn't this, like, indie darling Sabu? Like, this is 1995, early, before he'd done, you know, these bloodbaths and death matches and shit. And he's got a lot of buzz around him, making a name for himself. Of course, from Detroit, where this show is. And right. That's one thing we haven't talked about, is this crowd, if they seem a little bit underwhelmed, it is, as I understand, a pretty heavily papered crowd, like a lot of WCW shows from this time period are. It's going to pick up, but I think most of the folks here were not paid attendees, so they don't exactly, they're not going to be the most knowledgeable in terms of knowing what they're looking at.
Really, though? Because they get pretty hot, especially during the tag match and, like, towards the end.
They do get into it, yeah, towards the end. Like, the guys that, like, everybody knows, they definitely pop for. And so that helps it along further in the show.
Yeah, because didn't Jordan Duncan, he said when we had him on the show that his brother went to this pay-per-view, and I think he got free tickets.
Yeah. Correct. Mm-hmm. It's a nice little callback there. But, gosh, poor Sabu. He has to call Eric Bischoff and say, hey, am I really fired? Yeah, sorry. We forgot to tell
you. He was only there for 1 month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's weird. I mean, they're trying to grab up all these guys and get them signed, it seems like, and have a pretty diverse roster. You know, you've already got Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko. Benoit's there. So it just seems like he would be a good fit for what they're trying to build. I don't understand why they would just let him loose like that. But anyway, what's next? Are we giving away a motorcycle yet?
We sure are.
Oh, boy. All right.
Wait, did we skip the Kevin Sullivan part? Kevin the creepy-ass dude?
Okay.
We got to talk about that part.
We do have to talk about that. Why don't we go ahead and talk about that? Because this is Kevin Sullivan and his father, I guess he's supposed to be, King Curtis, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
I have never seen somebody more off-putting than Kevin Sullivan in this. I mean, it's just
off-putting how?
It's so bad. Like, he's just, like, so fucking creepy. And just the look on his face, and he looks directly into the camera, like, repeatedly. Mm-hmm. It creeps me out. Like he's looking at my soul, and it makes it feel icky.
Kevin Sullivan looked at your soul.
Right? With that pain on his face, and it's just, I mean, like, in a wonderful way, it's really, really horrible.
Yes. The madman from the Conk Republic by way of Boston, Massachusetts.
And it looks like he almost laughs at one point. And yes. then he talks. I think he ends up talking eventually.
Yeah, I almost, that's a good point. I almost wondered if he was, like, corpsing a little bit through this, because he's standing there not saying anything for the longest time. And
just forever.
I'm like, okay, is he trying to sell this? Is he, like, being submissive? Or did he just, like, forget his lines? Or he's trying not to laugh?
He, like, looks bored while the other guy's shouting.
Uh-huh.
He's just staring directly into the camera. And he eventually talks.
Yes. I want to think he's going for something, but I don't know, man. It's Kevin Sullivan, so who's to say? Steve, do you have an opinion on this segment?
I do. More of the fact that I always think that King Curtis is also the guy on Pee-wee's Playhouse, but that's Cowboy Curtis. Because there's a king on Pee-wee's Playhouse, and then there's Cowboy Curtis, and I think that's how I get confused. That and the King Curtis guy on the show is got a giant bowling ball with, like, what were those moles that he had on his head?
Yeah, that's a little bit unsettling, too. And I gather, all right, that guy is like a legendary wrestler who no one has seen.
Yeah, he's a legendary wrestler. So it was kind of, that's why they, Curtis Ikea.
There you go.
He looks like a old ass, broke ass Thanos. Right?
That's awesome.
Thanos in his blue period.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know what I think of? Who's the kid that, like, turned into a meme from Wife Swap that they call King Curtis, where he talks about how much he loves chicken nuggets? If you've seen any of these videos, you know who it is. But if not, then it's like, what? But I swear this is a thing. Like, he was a brief internet celebrity for a while from that show. And they called him King Curtis. He was such a...
I do see this.
Spoiled little shit. So, ah, God. The Dungeon of Doom, man. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
There's just so many different ways you can go with the Dungeon of Doom.
You're right. They should all get inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Just as a group?
Yeah, that should be a group induction, like next year. Whoever is still alive of that group, they need to go in.
All right. Who is still alive of that group?
Yeah, now I'm doing the mental inventory here.
And they're all still alive in my heart.
Oh, Sullivan and Zodiac, at least.
You got Zodiac. Yeah, you got Ming, Barbarian, right?
Oh,
Ben,
yeah.
Ben Sullivan. Hugh Morris, well, I might want to skip him. There's unfortunately the Avalanche / Shark, sadly no longer with us.
Well, that's because they kicked him out of the dungeon.
This is true. So
the dungeon is life affirming.
Wow.
So they have, you know, they took the powers of the master to keep them alive for forever.
I guess the giant Paul White or whatever, Big Show, still around, so they could
dead. No, he's dead.
Is he?
No.
I was
going to
say.
Okay, how about...
I saw him return from the dead on this show, but...
His father, though, no longer with us.
He's undead, yeah. Yes, his father, Andre the Giant, but he was never a member either, so...
No.
What about... is Kamala... Kamala died, didn't he?
Didn't he get, like, a leg amputated or something?
Yeah, he had the diabetes.
He had diabetes. And... I want to say, yeah, he's no longer with us, unfortunately. But, you know, he kind of got kicked out. Is he?
He's still alive.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, he's 68.
Wow. Is he already in the Hall of Fame?
No.
Oh, they got to do this. There's so many guys they could get in all at once. I think we've stumbled onto something here. Something kind of miraculous. All right, let's put a pin in that, and speaking of miracles, speaking of gifts, we're giving away a motorcycle, yes?
Right here on Survey Says.
Right here on Survey Says. Yeah, we're gonna dispense with Fan of the Month and just give away an Iron Horse motorcycle, just like they do on this show, just like they do on Road Wild and Hog Wild. Mm-hmm. It was just a good gimmick for them. But how about this lucky family here? Jenny, I think you had some thoughts on this segment.
I love this segment because it's so fucking weird. And there's just so many people just awkwardly standing there. While Mean Gene really works hard. And then Hogan just does the Hogan thing.
And I think if I bend Carlini's arm a little bit, Maniac Mike, he might have to put a little bit extra chrome on that thing. How about it, Cadillac Jack?
And then this lady gets so fucking tickled that she just keeps giggling into the mic. And I'm like, I relate to her. Because, like, that would be me. I would not be able to keep it together. if that was me.
Relatable. The dad, of course, Canadian tuxedoed out.
Yes. Very Even though cool. he's from Coleman, Alabama.
Yes.
He's going to ride that Harley from Detroit to Coleman, Alabama.
And the fact that Maniac Mike won the Harley-Davidson, brother, just kind of gives me that little extra edge I need, brother, because he's already told me how he's getting back to Alabama. You can ask him that later. It gives me that little extra edge.
Steve, what'd you think? We've got a nice family here, yeah?
It was hard for me to tell who was the family, who was okay. the motorcycle guy, who was with who. Like, I thought for a while most of them were part of whatever store gave away the motorcycle.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, okay, maybe Maniac Mike is with that lady. And are they going to, you know, are they going to go hog wild on the way back to Coleman, Alabama?
Yeah, they are.
Mm.
It was one thing I noted is that if you were one of these people who got free tickets to go to this show, between the Sabu match and our next match, there was a long time of sitting with Tony and Bobby and then going to the back. I think the Giant spoke, and then they went back again, and there was this motorcycle giveaway. That is a long break to just be sitting there watching the 1995 screen, if they even showed it on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's when you get drunk, right? That's that's when you're lubing up for the rest of the show for the main event.
You're lubing up, huh? We're leading up.
Well, I mean, the Giant, the Yeti, their finisher.
I want to talk to these people. I want to know how they're doing today.
Me too.
I want to know what they did. Did they sell the motorcycle? Did they keep it? I just want to. I want to get in touch with this family.
You meant the people in the stands who had free tickets. I'm like, we can get Jordan's brother. Yes. How are you doing with your life now?
All 7,000 of them, yes. They will all be inducted as fans of the month. All right. I mean, we're kind of moving through this thing, and I'm thinking we could go ahead and take our break here. Guys, do you have any thoughts? What are you thinking? How are you feeling about the show up to this point?
To be honest, at this point of the show, I didn't think it was that bad. I thought a couple of the matches, I liked the fire between Kurosawa and Hawk. The first match wasn't that bad. You know, the Zodiac got off my screen really quick. I really enjoyed the Sabu JL match for what it was. Yep. So for where we are right now, I'm like, I don't understand why this, you know, I know what was to come in terms of Hogan and the Giant. Like, I had seen that a couple times, that part of it. So, like, I knew that was coming, but I honestly didn't know what the rest of the show was outside of one match that they announced. So, like, hey, you know what? This isn't as bad as I thought.
It's feeling like a very professionally run wrestling pay-per-view, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, kind of.
the talking was a little much.
But, see, I like the talking. Like, I like Mean Gene. I like Tony and Bobby just, you know, bantering. So all of this is like, I'm good. I'm good with all of this. Like, the wrestling is like secondary.
Sure, yeah.
To everything else.
Well, as it often is on some of these 95 shows. But that's okay. With that being the case, we've still got a hell of a second half of this show pretty back-end loaded here. We're going to take a break. Why don't you get some refreshment, get yourself a pumpkin spice surge, I don't know, whatever you're into, man. And we're going to come back to this thing and find out when and if the wheels really fall off the bus. Stick around.
Oh, God, the big monster truck, not a bus.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Place Me Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here, and we want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceMeNation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the PlayStation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. And in addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB In Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post-Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hold on to your hats. The big one is coming to the Silverdome this Saturday night, 8 p.m. WKBD, TV 50, and 101 FM, WRIF. Welcome to Metro Chevy Dealers U.S. Hot Rod 7th Annual Thrill Show Spectacular. See screaming mud bomb funny cars side by side. Then the nation's top monsters are out to climb and crush them on the cars. Hollywood stuntman Brian Carson will attempt his five-story mid-air collision, plus demolition derby and funny car tug-of-war. Tickets now at all Ticketmaster outlets and the Silverdome box office this Saturday night, 8 p.m. Pontiac Silverdome. It's Crash Rama, Rama, Rama.
Coming in on a night train with an arm full of boxcars, on the wings of a magpipe across a hooligan night. Busted up a chaperone way out by the Kokomo. Cooked up a mess of mulligan and got into a fight. Whistling past the graveyard, stepping on a crack. I'm a mean mother hubba, Papa One-Eyed Jack. You probably seen me sleeping out by the railroad tracks. The Prince of Darkness.
Survey Says, coming to you from Detroit, Michigan, covering Halloween Havoc 1995. Hanging in there, hanging and banging, in fact. I am Tim, got Andy with me, and our two very special guests, Jennifer Smith and Steve Willey. Guys, we have, at this portion of the show, a special announcement to make, and that is recognizing our Survey Says Fan of the Month Club inductee. Now, this is someone I think we actually all know making his long-awaited induction into the Survey Says Fan of the Month Club. Without further ado, it is going to be Jason Sherman. How about that?
Nice!
Yeah, you know Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother in fur.
Brother in fur, how about that?
Wait, what?
My brother in fur, I said it.
Okay. Is that like an Eskimo bro, or?
No, we're cat bros.
Okay.
Yeah, cat bros, yeah. You've got Wildcat Willie here, and he's quite the cat aficionado, Jason Sherman. Mm-hmm. Jason Sherman, you may know that name from the Place to Be Nation live chats Facebook group. If you want to get in on that, hit us up on Place to Be Nation on Facebook, can add you to the group. Pretty lively discussions that take place there daily. Jason is a Bush super fan. He has met Gavin Rossdale many times, making me very jealous. Also a big fan of Our Lady Peace, like myself, great Canadian rock group. He listened to the two episodes of Sunday Groove that I did on Place to Be Nation Pop, particularly on Our Lady Peace. We struck up a conversation. Come to find out, he's a fan of Survey Says as well. So, at long last, he goes into the Fan of the Month Club. Very, very cool. And Andy, I know you've had some interactions with Jason on Facebook as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's been commenting on our posts about the show.
Excellent. So,
and also, he might be the next guest on Freak Out Drive-In.
Oh.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. More on that later, then. Very cool. Okay. So, welcome to the club, Jason. I'm sure we will have many, many ongoing discussions about this in the near future. So, get back to business here. Back to the Joe Louis Arena. Our next match, we've got Lex Luger making his first of two appearances tonight, taking on Ming. These two, you know, sure, but for 13 minutes, that's a little bit excessive, right?
Hell no, I liked it. That was like Luger was like, he was like really fired up for once.
Okay. Any dissenting views on that?
Yeah, I don't like Luger at all.
Huh. Really?
He sucks. No.
Show's over. Show's over.
He sucks. He's terrible. Okay.
It's just, ugh.
You know, I'm trying to think of if we could even steer you in the direction of, like, Lex Luger stuff that you would like. I think he might not even be, like, in your wheelhouse as far as what you really enjoy in wrestling. I don't think that Luger really intersects with any of that.
No, it is not at all. And every day is Halloween Havoc for the Taskmaster, so, like, he's, like, super involved in this, and it's better than what Luger does anyway.
All right. Steve?
Yes?
How do you weigh in on this?
I actually took notes on this match. I said, and first of all,
this match of all matches.
Yes, I said this match is boring.
Yes. Aww.
Sullivan tries to get Lex in the Dungeon of Doom. Oh, cool pile driver.
Are you just reading your notes right now?
Yes.
Thank you.
Sullivan interferes to let Luger win. Absolutely terrible match with no heat. I think this was a match I almost fell asleep in. And then my favorite part of the match, it's like when commentary really describes what's happening in the match. It's like inadvertent commentary, I guess. Bobby Heenan during the replay, where I think Kevin Sullivan and you weren't really sure if he kicked Ming or if he kicked Lex Luger at first. Mm-hmm. Bobby Heenan said, "I'm not sure who he even kicked, and I don't really care."
My notes include weird ass camera angles. Sullivan interfered. Nick Patrick is terrible.
Again with the Nick Patrick key.
He's awful.
Wow.
And during our break, Jenny was talking about how sexually attractive she was to Dave Meltzer.
Oh, no,
that was you. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, like, I'm rubber and you're glue. That was a good comeback. And so I looked up.
I recorded all of that, so I'll just put that right in. Go ahead.
The Meltzer star ratings for this match was a negative star.
Yes.
Negative star.
Damn it, man.
Hey, God. you can like what you like. I mean, you can be wrong, but you can like what you like.
Yeah.
I just thought it didn't need 13 minutes. It's, you know, it is what it is, but come on, let's chill a little. It's just the time management on this show. If there's one thing that, setting aside all the crazy angles and, you know, the backstage stuff and, yeah, the match quality as it is, just the time management is sort of all over the place here, where this match sort of gets too much time. The opener arguably gets too much time also. And, you know, we talked about use a lot more of Sabu and Mr. JL. Sabu. I think, you know, Randy Savage and Zodiac, they got that one exactly right. But, you know, some of these, it just seems like, you know, who booked this shit? You wonder sometimes.
Kevin Sullivan.
You know, I think he did.
Did anybody notice?
This led to, you know, Randy Savage against Lex Luger later on in the show, and that match only got a few minutes. So, like, why? That was one of the feuds you were building to. So,
yeah.
Why is that match only a few minutes? and this one 13. And I don't like Lex Luger. I like his late 80s, very early 90s stuff. I don't think that's like an unpopular opinion at all. But I do not like any of his stuff from the 90s, the late mid 90s on. But I do like Ming. I was hoping that this would be, there'd be a clubbering going on in this match. And there just wasn't, outside of that really cool pile driver. This match needed more fireball.
needed more fireball. That's a good takeaway. And for that matter, I mean, why do Luger and Savage wrestle twice on the show? Again, if you're talking about, if you're harping on these quote-unquote dark matches that, as you pointed out, Steve, were on Main Event, in fact. But if you're going to throw one of those on here, you could certainly do it if you just manage your time a little better and maybe not have guys pulling double duty for no discernible reason. I guess, so the storyline here is what? That Sullivan is teasing the idea that Luger is really like a sleeper agent for the Dungeon of Doom, and Luger is denying that. So
he's trying to... trying to sow discord between Luger, Dungeon and Doom, and then and like the combination of Hogan, Sting, Luger, and Savage. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty much doing that on their own. The Nitro's running up to it. Sting says, hey, trust Luger. And Savage is saying, you know, you can't trust him. Mm-hmm. And Hogan can't make up his mind, brother.
So that's the idea here. So Luger gets the win by DQ. That means he will go on to wrestle Randy Savage coming up here in just a bit.
Did anybody laugh at Kevin Sullivan's outfit? Because it's like that weird spandexy kind of like leotard thing.
How can you not?
That was my only note really from the match, so I just had to throw it in there.
That Kevin Sullivan looks like an Oompa Loompa.
With dress. Lightning bolts on this shit, why?
I don't know, dude. So we're going to move into now big tag match, and that is...
Yeah.
Now we're cooking. Sting and inexplicable, well, not inexplicable, but surprising partner Ric Flair going up against Arn Anderson. Daddy Arn, yeah? Mm-hmm. And his new ally, Brian Pillman. And this is, like, great. And for whatever it might be, you know, whatever you think might be lacking in terms of, you know, the work rate is totally made up for by the awesome storytelling that they do. This is continuing, in a fashion, the feud between Flair and Arn Anderson. They had their match at Fall Brawl in September. Jenny, I think you've seen that match, haven't you?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, God, you got to get on that match. I think you will love. Will, yeah, yeah.
If it has Daddy Arn in it, I will.
Oh, does it ever. And so this is the continuation of that, this falling out that has taken place between the longtime friends and associates Flair and Anderson. Anderson has picked up Pillman as his partner, and Flair has recruited Sting. Now, of course, the big idea here, Flair is the guy who, over the long course of his career, always stabs guys in the back. Sting is the dude who is always getting stabbed in the back, and Sting basically calls him on it, right? In the weeks leading up to this match, tells him, Flair, if you swerve me, you're a dead man.
Mm-hmm.
And just keeps telling him over and over, you know, I'm not going to get played by you. Flair says, no, man, I'm on the level. I'm telling you, I need you. I need a partner. You're the guy. We go into this match. They do a little angle where Flair is, like, laid out backstage, and it's Sting fighting alone, doing a long, long heat segment, face in peril. Flair eventually making his way to ringside, looking for the hot tag. I thought this whole stretch was tremendous, guys, where, you know, it's not exactly that Southern tag formula, but it's, you know, the heel's getting all this heat on Sting. He's trying to get the tag, you know, just scratching and clawing at every angle and can't do it. What'd you all think of the body of this match just before the big reveal? Were you feeling it? Andy, how about you first?
Oh, yeah, I totally dug it. Like, I liked, like, Sting, like, brawling with both the guys on the floor and then Omia trying to come back. Everything about it was just good. It was finally, like, a good match on the show, like a legit good match.
Legit good match, exactly. Jenny, I know with your Arn Anderson fandom, how about
it? Yeah, I was all about this shit. Arn and Brian whispering in each other's ears is just, like, hilarious to me.
Okay.
And all of their hilarious selling, Brian's just, like, random craziness. He's just extra. And then, well, before Flair gets there, and then they do the extended, like, sequence where Sting keeps trying to tag Flair. It's just it's just beautiful. It's just fantastic. Flair just eats it up. It's just beautiful.
Yes.
How do you not be entertained by this shit?
That spine buster too, right? And so finally, we get Sting making the hot tag, and immediately it's Flair feeling it, doing his swagger. Nail Sting in the face. It's just so close. And, like, you know, everybody knows it's coming. Like, the fans, like, actually pop for the turn just because it just sort of delivered on their expectations.
Right.
As much as, like, you know, you kind of hate to see a match end in a kind of fuck finish like that. It's just...
No.
They just love Flair, and they just love that they were right. So it's so awesome. And this basically is going to be the big 1995 reformation of the Horsemen and kind of their last gasp for a bit here in the 90s. Just love it. This is the most, like, proper wrestling match and wrestling angle that you're going to get on the show. I will put a question to you all. Did you think that in any way, like, it took away from the turn having, you know, doing the whole deal where Flair was laid out before the match? Did that make it too obvious, or does that even matter? Steve?
It made it obvious if you've been watching wrestling for a long time, but I don't know, if you're thinking that Sting's already hip to getting turned on and... hey, this has already been done before. Well, maybe you believe that it's going to go okay, because why would they just slam this in your face? Why would they make it so obvious?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I knew it was going to happen because I knew about this already, but it didn't take away from my enjoyment of the match at all.
Yeah.
I actually really liked this match, and I was just kind of waiting to see when the turn was going to come. And I didn't realize, and I noticed that during the match, Flair didn't touch, once he came out, he didn't touch Arn or Pillman at all. He would, like, kind of come close, but not actually do it.
They were very smart in that regard, because, again, if you haven't been watching wrestling for a million years and you're not really looking for that type of thing, you probably don't realize he hasn't gotten physically involved up to this point. He certainly hasn't been tagged into the match. That's the story they're telling, but you don't realize, oh, this could all be bullshit. We didn't see the beatdown. He hasn't gotten in there and mixed it up with anybody. So it's all very logical. And they did this exactly the way you want to see that type of thing done. And certainly that's been done very badly, thinking in terms of, like, the Russo years, where guys just go out and kill each other in these matches, and then all of a sudden they're, like, buddy-buddy. And it's just like, so they're, like, fake fighting, or they're really fighting, and now they've suddenly decided that it was worth it to pull the wool over our eyes. It's so weird the way that you see these things done when they are done badly. Jenny, did you see this turn coming?
I kind of pretended like I didn't, even though I really did. because I wanted to believe it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wanted to, like, do the whole experience because obviously I didn't know the story or any of this shit. So,
yeah.
You know, I would, you know, just be like, you know, I was just waiting for the tag. I was just hanging on, just edging for the tag. And then when it finally came, I was like, well, now the shit happens. And so, yeah, I was surprised, but also not surprised at all.
Edging until it finally came.
Exactly.
And so it sounds like you were able to suspend your disbelief, in other words, and just go along for the ride.
Yeah, that's what I try to do with all of this.
And that's the best thing I think you can ask for in a wrestling match, you know? Very, very good stuff here. We will get the, you know, fourth member of the Horsemen in Chris Benoit and Nitro's following this show. And that's going to be your Horsemen for a little bit here. Pretty strong grouping. I do wish this had led to, like, more of a, like, pretty intense Sting Flair rivalry. And it sort of fizzles after this. They kind of do the thing at Starcade with the triangle match, but for the most part, Flair goes back to doing the kind of stuff he'd been doing before, where it's mostly working with Savage, going into 96, even has like matches with the Giant, gets mixed up in the Dungeon of Doom shit with Hogan and Savage here again. So I don't know. I felt like they really kind of made Sting look like an idiot by not letting him have any sort of real comeuppance from this. But that's kind of the story of Sting, so I can't really harp on it.
And the other story, there he was involved in a whole other story with Savage and Hulk and Luger, like we alluded to before. So it was,
yeah.
You know, it was just kind of odd that they placed this here and had this side story going on when everything on the Nitros was more towards that foursome.
It is, yeah, it is. So, like, it was just sort of a detour from the program Sting was in. You're right. Mm-hmm. All right, well.
I was hoping we get Jenny's son's reaction to that, because I liked his reaction to the Dustin and Rude match from that Beast Blast.
Well, I was kind of saving this for later, but I tried to get my son to watch the Monster Truck Sumo match, and he would not do it.
He refused
to do it. And I was like, I need your content for this fucking podcast. And he just would not do it. I'm like, well, fuck you then, little kid. Get away from me.
Did you call him a work rate, Mark?
I said, get your tiny ass away from me if you're not going to watch wrestling with me.
Well, I guess we'll take that as our segue into the Monster Truck. Not just a Monster Truck battle, it's a Monster Truck sumo match on the roof of Cobo Hall. So where does one even begin to talk about this? How about the sumo psychology in this match of, you know, each truck vying for position, trying to, you know, they're trying to push one another out of the circle. You've got fireworks going off. It's very thrilling, right? I mean, I would think at least baseline 3 stars, yeah? No? All right, well.
I will give the design of the monster trucks 3 stars.
Oh,
because because they had, like, Hogan arms on the side of the truck.
They did have Hogan arms.
So that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever been to a monster truck show? Jenny, I think you'd be the most likely to have been to one.
Why? Because I'm from South Alabama.
That's got to burn.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably most likely you, then me, then... I don't know the stereotypes associated with the Midwest enough to...
Definitely to Andy and then Willie.
Okay.
Thank you.
But no, I have never been.
You've never been? I've never been either. And it always comes around, you know, Sunday, 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 and I'm busy Sunday, sorry.
I'm hungover that day, so sorry.
That's my recovery day.
Amy, have you ever seen a monster truck?
Yeah.
Maybe in Packin, Illinois?
Well, they have it in Peoria, like, I think annually, like every February. Ooh. And I remember going when I was like single digit age, I think. Oh. And I think I didn't like the noise, so my dad got earplugs.
Yeah.
But there's one guy that I work with at the radio stations, or I used to work with, and he's become really big in the Monster Jam company. Like, he's like a... He does radio announcing here, and then he does, like, he goes out and does the Monster Jam, like, tours. And I think he's even been hosting, like, their TV show on Fox Sports.
Sweet. Willie, fess up.
I have never gone to Monster Trucks. I do know that they probably have them in Green Bay, but I try not to go to Green Bay unless I have to be at work. I'm sure that's come around to Milwaukee as well before, but... Mm. No, I only go to cultural events. I go
or Ninja Warrior events.
Highbrow entertainment.
Cultural events.
Art house films. And this weekend I will be going to Chicago to see Sleazy Independent Wrestling, too. So, you know, all of the highbrow entertainment. None of this monster truck garbage.
That sounds like a cultural event for sure. Indie mm-hmm. scum wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
In the Midwest. Okay. I think the story of this match, though, is the attempted homicide where the coward Hulk Hogan throws Paul White off the roof of Cobo Hall. Somehow he got off on that on technicality. I guess the Giant did not press charges. You would think that that's a criminal offense, but I don't know. You know, somehow... Hulk Hogan is always able to get over on the system here and just up to his old tricks.
Well, he was obviously defending himself against the Giant.
I'm not so sure.
It was self-defense.
No, I don't think that flies. I think the Giant had a change of heart. I think he recognized that he lost fair and square. They were going to put their problems behind them. This was a time for healing, and Hulk Hogan, you know, took advantage of the vulnerability that the Giant showed here and tried to murder him, just like he murdered his father, Andre the Giant.
All right, so y'all tell me this. Are they actually driving these vehicles, or?
They are not.
Is it, okay, good. Thank God.
Professional monster truck drivers are driving these. And there are some interior shots of Hogan and the Giants. And if those get a little bit repetitive, it's because I guess they didn't take too many. sort of becomes the same thing over and over.
Do they do, and obviously none of us have gone to monster truck shows before, but do they
except
do
for
like,
Andy.
Yeah.
Right. Do they do sumo monster truck? Because it just looks like one guy's going in drive while the other has their car in reverse. And then they switch it. The other guy goes in reverse. And then that's what it looked like, to be honest.
Well, here's the thing. And here's what I don't know. Are monster truck shows worked?
I wouldn't doubt it. I bet you they are.
Are those actually competitive? And I mean, I don't understand the rules or the object of what's happening at the cultural event known as the Monster Truck Rally.
Don't they just jump their trucks over like a row of cars? I think that's all they do.
They don't fight each other.
They do that. Yeah, they do that. So is it like a distance thing? Whoever, is that how they score it? Is there even scoring? Like, I'm so... This is a world just lost to me as a coastal elitist, of course.
I picture it more as an exhibition instead of like a competition, if that makes sense. Like, look what I can do, woo! And then not like head-to-head battle like these guys.
We're going to get flamed by monster truck enthusiasts now.
You're right.
I bet you.
Monster truck enthusiast Trent Williams is going to
blast us. Yes, I have no doubt that's who it will be. But no, that, I mean, getting back to your question, it is a good question. Have they ever done a monster truck sumo contest? If not, maybe they all steal that idea, you know? Maybe WCW and their infinite wisdom came up with a good gimmick. Quite innovative. So, anyway, this goes 5 minutes.
That's it?
That's it. I know. It felt like a long five
minutes. Felt like a lot longer.
Yeah. I mean, and that does not include the post-match drama, mind you.
Do they get to keep these trucks? What happens to these trucks after this match?
Hmm.
They give them to Medusa.
Yeah, I was wondering. Medusa driving them down. She's a... Yeah, she...
She's still a truck driver, isn't she?
I think so. She's a big part of that world now. Wow. This is opening up a lot of questions that...
It is pretty amazing, though. Like, they're on the roof. And, like, I just think about all the logistics of this happening.
I do wonder about those logistics, too.
Do they chopper them in? Like...
Yeah, I mean, not just the cost, but the...
Right.
How do you, I mean, what's like, you know, hell, what's the insurance situation up there? I mean, what if a fucking truck drives off the roof? Is it even really the roof of anything? Is this totally gimmicked?
Right, yeah, that is true.
Is this just totally gimmicked? I don't know.
I think it was really the roof.
Yeah, they have the aerial shots there. So.
They have the aerial shots. I mean, it looks like a roof. Looks like Cobra Hall, I guess.
What was the point of the charges, though? Like the little the two firework things that they were making it out to seem like if they hit that, it was over.
I think they were just there to signify like when the match was over. Like once you set those off, like you were the winner. That's when you pushed your opponent out of the circle. This is the most extensive breakdown of this match that has ever occurred, I think. And the most fair and balanced. I think we've done good work.
We have.
Well, and then we also have the MVP of the show coming back, Bobby Heenan.
Yes.
Who legitimately is my MVP of the show. Yeah. You know, besides the fireball incident where he went nuts, like he just screaming over and over again, like, why are we putting the across the fact that he's dead?
He cannot wrap his mind around it.
Yeah, like, well, we're gonna send someone back and see if he's okay. He's like, he got thrown in the river.
Of course he's not.
He's got pushed off the river. Why isn't anyone listening to me?
I managed his father. I care about this man.
That was so good, though. Like, it's like he's the only one who's putting the what they're trying to put across as serious stuff over.
Like, and Tony's like trying to be realistic. Like, Tony's like, we have to move on. We have to move on to this next thing. And Bobby just won't let it go.
Like, oh, well, you know, the giant just, you know, perhaps Hulk Hogan should be charged with manslaughter. We don't know if he's alive or dead, but hey, we got the Savage Luger on match, and the show must go on.
Ooh, did this establish the precedent for that?
Jeez, that got dark really quick.
Yeah. That's what we do here. So, after a man falls to his death the first time, on a wrestling program, we have the show going on with our kind of semi-main event here, Randy Savage versus Lex Luger. I have absolutely nothing for this match. It is 5 minutes, not as much time as you'd expect for these guys, but once again, I'm not going to complain here. It's, I don't know, I guess it's inoffensive enough, right?
Yeah.
I liked it. I don't know. Like, I'm like the odd man out on this show.
No, I like this show, but I get caught up between like being like for real about it and then being not for real about it.
And like, oh, now I have to watch a match.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. There was that part.
The heel.
Yeah.
I have no idea who I'm supposed to be rooting for. Randy Savage. Always,
you're always supposed to root for Randy Savage. Doesn't matter what they're trying to tell you.
I hate Lex Luger, so I already know that, but the crowd has no idea.
No, and it was a, and this is the general theme, like we were saying, this, the timing and the placement of stuff. If they would have done those two matches on Main Event, the Savage Zodiac and Luger Ming, they could have done this at a different time. Maybe they could have done the truck thing a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Because then they would have not avoided this entire match.
Right.
You know, with Bobby screaming, like, hello, there's a guy dead.
Right.
And Tony Schiavone saying, you know, that's really sad about what happened to the Giant, but wasn't that monster truck thing really cool besides that? It was amazing. A guy died.
So a guy cool. died.
But... So cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It seemed like Savage and Luger were having or entering a kind of heated feud from the TVs leading up to this, and this is like all you get. And it doesn't much continue past this show other than they're still doing the will he, won't he.
Who's you on, brother?
Yeah, with Luger. And I don't know. Savage and Luger, they don't interact much. They don't have singles matches a whole lot, at least until like 98 WCW, where it's just, you know, the constant WCW versus NWO stuff, and that's just a much different dynamic. And this was a point where they were both in a place where I think they could have been having still pretty decent matches, but they just never really pulled the trigger on those two.
Yeah,
but that's okay.
Yeah, because I kind of felt like the Luger thing was like, it didn't come off the way it should have, because it's like he was a face against Ming, but here he's a heel and he's cheating and like putting his feet on the ropes and stuff. And I wish he would just would have been one way or the other instead of in between.
Right, right.
Totally agree.
Yeah. All right, then.
Just last part of this match, the ending. So Savage goes to roll up Luger. Luger bonks heads with Jimmy Hart, knocking Luger down. He stays down as Savage goes to the top, hits the big elbow for the win. Not a problem with that. Understood why that would stun him. He got hit in the head. The problem I have with it is Jimmy Hart falls from the apron to the concrete after getting hit with Lex Luger, you know, a legitimate muscle man who's, what, 280? Yeah. Former football player. Jimmy Hart goes down. Before Macho Man hits the elbow on Luger, Jimmy Hart is already up and walking around the ring. So either they really screwed that up, or Jimmy Hart stronger than Lex Luger.
Well, maybe it's the power of the Dungeon of Doom, like you were saying.
Well, that could be. Lex Luger's not a full inductee yet. Oh, but wait, but Jimmy Hart...
Foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because what we get in our main event, it's Hulk Hogan taking on the resurrected undead Giant. So I guess maybe he had a water landing, and he, you know, he hit just right. So although he is dry, I mean, he only had a few minutes actually to dry off if he did land in one of the Great Lakes, which apparently do not actually border Cobo Hall anywhere in the vicinity of the roof. But in any case, they're going to have their singles match now for the World Heavyweight Championship. WCW really had something with the Giant early on, and this is something we've tracked throughout this show on Survey Says, that he was just, he had that it factor to him, that it wasn't just his size, because we've seen big men in wrestling. Look at El Gigante, you know, he's fucking 8 feet tall or whatever, but, you know, nobody wanted to see him for more than, you know, 3 minutes at a time. But with the Giant, you had a dude who was actually pretty athletic, could move, And contrary, I think, to popular belief, he could talk. I mean, he did have, you know, various different mouthpieces during this period, but when he had to, he could cut a pretty decent promo, I thought. And they've got him in this storyline that doesn't necessarily do anybody any favors. And this is, you know, more memorable for the whole Jimmy Hart turn and the systematic destruction of Hulkamania. We get a very big debut. Steve, one of your favorites, who do we see here making his first appearance? And how does he make that appearance, Steve?
Oh, someone made their first appearance here?
Well,
now I'm really confused.
He thawing out from the ice.
Oh, the yeti. Yes. I forgot that he showed up eventually.
What? How can you forget that?
Because I did the Nitro watches for when he debuted with the ice dildo. Which I patented, by the way. So when anyone uses that.
Sure you did.
Okay. I did. We can go back in the archives and listen to that. But yes, the Yeti, not the Yeti, the Yeti makes his debut. Because everyone and their mother runs in on this match. Because you can't beat Hogan without that happening. Mm-hmm. So it took Jimmy Hart, Kevin Sullivan, Lex Luger, the Giant, who you're already trying to say is the basically the undead. Like, you can't throw him off of a building and hurt him.
Kill him. Yeah.
But you also can't beat Hulk Hogan with him.
Right. Which, I mean, it's Hogan formula stuff. It's kind of the dying days of that Hulk Hogan character. And I mean, this is the dark side of Hulkamania. You know, he comes out in the all black. He's had his signature mustache shaved off by the Dungeon of Doom leading up to this. And yeah, sort of a precursor to the Hollywood character. But he
looks
goes
good. I think he looked good without the mustache.
Does look good.
I would agree with that, yes.
But he's got, like, the Kevin Sullivan face paint. It's, like, really weird.
Yeah, that's stupid. Why?
And how did he get a chance to put it on? Because the Lex Luger-Randy Savage match was 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, obviously, they taped that thing early.
Maybe it was grease from the monster truck?
Yeah.
Oh, could be.
Oh, it could have been Johnny B. Badd's makeup artist from Saturday Night. A dabble, do ya?
Oh, yeah.
There's no wrestling here, though. It's like fucking like hand holding and like bear hugging and butt fucking.
Like, oh, yeah. It's like late.
What's. Yeah.
Mid to late 90s Hogan.
Yes, the butt fucking was definitely a major component in the climax to this whole affair. You've got. Right, so the Giant has Hogan in a bear hug, you know, fairly bog-standard wrestling stuff. The Yeti makes his way, somewhat lumbering, down the entrance ramp, gets in the ring, and is now attacking Hogan from behind, and...
In the most awkward three-way ever witnessed.
Yes, and he's gyrating as he does so. And this is Ron Reese, by the way, who
yes.
is like taller, in fact, I think, than Paul White.
Yes, he is. And you can clearly tell.
And they're sort of trying to obscure that, I think, with this ridiculous gimmick, because clearly their star is Paul White the Giant. They've already got him picked out. Kind of a shame for Ron Reese, though, because you figure if they had not discovered the Giant, which he was like playing basketball at the time, right? He was a college basketball star, I think. Because he was really young when they picked him up.
I have hot inside news about this, and news I spelled with a Z.
Ooh.
Because I did research about the Yeti.
Straight from lordsofpain.net. Let's hear it.
Yes, Al Isaacs and Scoops. So Ron, I found an interview with Ron Reese, and he wasn't even supposed to be the Yeti. the Yeti was supposed to be El Gigante returning.
No way.
Yeah, and that didn't happen, so he had to do that. And I don't remember this, but I refreshed my memory reading this, is that at the next pay-per-view, which is World War III, the Yeti is now a ninja.
A ninja?
A ninja.
He, like a super big ninja. I forgot the last. I'm not joking at all about this.
No, I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah. So he becomes a ninja, and they don't really explain it, but it's the super giant ninja is his name.
So he's he starts out as a Sasquatch, I guess, wrapped in gauze, unfrozen from an ice dildo.
Right.
I'm with you. But why was, I just don't understand though why they would feel the need to wrap a primordial beast in gauze.
Like a mummy. Yeah.
Yeah, why they got him wrapped like a mummy?
Right, just call him the mummy if you were going to do that. And I get, yeah, it's Halloween. But yeah, he turned into super giant ninja. He only did a couple matches as that. And in the interview I read with Ron Reese, was that was the plan for him all along, was to be this like super giant ninja. Because, it looks funny having a ninja who's a giant. Wow. You know, probably was just going to be like some sort of sad WCW Saturday Night character or something. And but at World War III, they called him the Yeti, although he was dressed as the giant. And he said that I think it was Heenan, Ron Reese said, the only way they explained it, it was like, oh, I guess he must have thawed out.
Hey, at least we get an in-story explanation, an in-universe explanation for this.
Right.
Even if it's a Bobby Heenan bullshit one-liner.
But least he cares, right? Like, it goes back to what you're saying. Like, he cares enough to, like, hey, yeah, we know this is garbage, but at least I'm going to try to put it over because that's my freaking job.
Because no one else is going to.
Right.
I don't know, though. I wonder, had they not discovered Paul White, however they discovered him, would Ron Reese have gotten the giant character? I don't think it would have worked as well, mind you, but would they have said, hey, we need another Andre-like foil for Hulk Hogan? Here's this guy who's 7 feet tall. Let's go ahead and try to push him. It just seems like maybe he got an unlucky break there. I don't know. But anyway, it's too bad that he's sort of a footnote in wrestling lore, WCW lore.
Whatever, he's the motherfucking Yeti.
All right, well, that said, that's our show. Halloween Havoc 95, guys, we survived it. It was fun. Steve Willey, what are your parting thoughts? How do you sum this one up?
I was hoping that this was going to be an event that was not the podcast, the Halloween Havoc itself, that the whole thing was going to be so bad it was good. There are definitely parts that were so bad it was good, and I do enjoy watching that kind of stuff thoroughly. But it's just a weird mix of that really, really bad wrestling, nonsensical wrestling, and then a couple gems like the tag team match with Arn and Pillman, and you know the bad DDP match. I didn't think it was great by any means, but it was still a good match. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, like some all-time garbage Hulk Hogan and Giant and Yeti stuff.
That really has to be seen. Andy, my partner, what do you think of this show as a whole?
I liked it. And I think it's kind of like, I almost think 1995 is kind of like a sweet spot for WCW because it has just the right amount of crap and just the right amount of good wrestling because, yeah, you got the Horseman stuff going on. I liked Luger. I like Savage. But then you have the crap and you have the mix of the weird, funny kind of backstage like segments and interviews. But the one thing, though, that kind of seems really odd to me is like when you guys were talking about the Yeti debuting on like Nitro and like the Dark Side of Hulkamania. It's like Eric Bischoff pitched doing Nitro and having a live head-to-head show with the WWF, but then the Dungeon of Doom is the best storyline he could come up with.
Yeah.
How's that going to really compete? I mean, I guess it did, but I don't know. It just seems like looking back, like, really? That's the best you could do?
Yeah, I definitely had that same thought looking back on this. Just, it feels a whole lot like WCW still trying to find themselves in the Nitro era, still feeling things out, and putting on a professional enough presentation, but, you know, a lot of shaky storylines and matches that are okay, but they're still in the process of building up their roster. This is the type of thing that I really enjoy do looking back on this individual show. It probably holds a special place in my heart just for how all over the place it is. That said, a little does go a long way. I don't think I would have an easy time of watching this on a consistent basis, this kind of thing, on a consistent basis over and over and over, week to week. It probably would wear me down eventually. But here, you know, as a one-off show, I do get a lot of enjoyment out of it. Jenny, let's give you the final word here.
Okay, well, y'all, I think that y'all know my thoughts about Uncensored 95. So this is not quite that level.
Okay.
But so this was one of those ones where when I was just getting into this, it was sort of like even somebody as dumb to wrestling as me knew what this was. So it was like, it was just all very transparent, but also engaging enough with the performances for me to just be about it, you know, just about the cheese and to help me sort of like cultivate this weird sort of freakish like thing that I like about wrestling, like unlike everybody else. So I love this show. I think it's stupid and wonderful and fantastic and dumb.
Well said. All right, Wildcat Willie, plug your social media, plug any projects you may have in the works. The floor is yours.
Excellent. I am on most of the main event shows that are on this very pod feed that you're getting this wonderful show from. And we will do current wrestling. I do it with Scott Criscolo and Nate Milton, although usually they do the WWE stuff because I'm too busy watching this kind of stuff. And then we will watch classic New Japan matches. And you think this is interesting? Check out our TNA original weekly pay-per-view reviews, which are the most bipolar wrestling television shows in the history of our great sport. Occasionally I'll do a show called Mission Indie Possible, which is not as often as I would like to, and just kind of look at random matches or live watches from around the world. And then I am on Instagram, where you can look at pictures of my cats or watch me fall. It's
yes.
Steve Willie, StevWille, and then the number one. And I'm a nice guy, and I'll follow you back.
Mm. All right. Are you private on Instagram?
No, I'm public, so you can.
Wow.
You can come. Yeah, I'm.
That's risky.
It is risky. Right. It hasn't come back to bite me.
Putting it out there. Okay, fair enough. Jenny, your social media presence and your additional podcasts.
My social media presence is at Jenny Cruz 2814 on Twitter. And my podcasts are Talking Pop with you, the most wonderful Tim Capel, which we have not planned our most current episode, so we will try to do that. Of course, this comes out in 185 days, so probably probably there'll be some Talking Pop before then. And then Freak Out Drive-In.
I thought the episode we did was a great episode that we just didn't know.
It was.
The second appearance.
Yes. That might be a thing. Yeah.
Very canny. Very canny of you.
So Freak Out Drive-In is my horror movie live watch. And then Geek and Sassy is my most favorite love, me and Miranda being geeky and sassy.
That's right. Awesome. Well, you can find me on the aforementioned Talkin' Pop, Place to Be Nation, Pop! Also on Place to Be Nation, Pop! I am one quarter of the Marvel Age podcast with Nick Duke, Russell Sellers, the man of yore, Todd Weber. Very cool stuff there, looking at the best stories and the most important stories in the history of Marvel Comics. Oh, gosh, God, what else?
I think that's been
a little busy. Listen to me go down in flames, Place to Be Nation trivia tournament. no spoilers, because it all would have come out by now. So, on social media, I am at Psyke68 on Twitter, CYKE68. Andy, we have the Survey Says Instagram. Where can folks find our Instagram, and what have we got cooking?
It is at Survey_Says, and I kind of post from time to time.
It's fun. It is very fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
Thank you.
All right, then. So we are not desperately short on time, doing real good on time, you know, because we're so professional here on Survey Says. But we do have to get out of here. Coming up next, it is the curse of Michael Myers making its TNT first run debut. Wow, that's a pretty big get for us, starring Donald Pleasance and Paul Rudd. His feature film debut. How about that? Look for that on Monster Vision with Penn and Teller, because it's 1995. And on that note, we gotta go!
On the foggy hill rocks with a crazy little demon blowing his top, fire in his eyes and smoke from his head. You gotta be real cool to hear the words he said. He did a for the one he loved, so he had death on his mind, cause my demon let him go. Going around through the world till he understand his pain. Somebody help him get his demon home again. He did a